39 seconds to go. Manning takes the snap, looks left, lobs it left, burst is wide open. Touchdown, Giants! In the left corner of the end zone! With 35 seconds to go, and the Giants regain the lead. Manning to Burris.
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Oh, what a Super Bowl. The waning moments there. Super Bowl 42. Feels like eons ago. But a few things remain true. Among them, the Patriots are still good. And Eli Manning is still slinging it. It looks like he is on track to be the starter on opening day. I know a lot of people had questions about that. I thought that Daniel Jones would get it, but it sounds like now the Giants, the pass catchers and beyond buying in, Eli's arm strength being diminished, overstated this offseason, according to many who are firsthand witnesses there. And a guy who was a firsthand witness actually was in the game, not just a bypasser, but actually out on the field blocking it up there. Sean O'Hara coming at you in just a second here. Of course, we're going to talk about not just the Giants, not just Eli versus Daniel Jones and Saquon. We get into which is the better 26 in New York, Le'Veon Bell or Saquon Barkley, or who will have the better year. We dig in on the Philadelphia Eagles looking mighty, says Sean O'Hara, upcoming here. Don't want to give too much away. I will tell you, no jive here in Studio 66. The interview is complete, and it is grand stuff. We talk a little bit about the relationship of Odell Beckham with Baker Mayfield versus Eli Manning, and it sort of relates to what went on with Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger and how that looks for them. Nick Foles going down to Jacksonville, what it's like to play in a run-first offense if you're an offensive lineman versus a pass-first one. What else, Spaghetti? We covered a lot of ground, didn't we?
Yeah, we went through a little bit of Browns talk, a little bit of Steelers, Raiders talk, heavy Giants and Eagles, some NFC talk, deep dive on Eli and Daniel Jones, O-line play.
Case Keenum's name is floated.
Yeah.
We have a lot of if you like football, basically, I think you're going to like this conversation. And of course, as we always are, presented by Zaxby's Famous Chicken Fingers, Wings, and Salads. Go get you some, just like Spaghetti and I did when we were down in Nashville, Tennessee, around the draft. It's tender vittles. You know, I like the fingers. I love wings, but the fingers really dynamite there.
As someone who's a member of the Thick Cast, to hear that Zaxby's is our sponsor again for...
That's exciting.
So exciting. The food was great.
You need to get a salad, man.
I did have a salad when we were down in Nashville one day, and I need probably a lot more. Very tasty yet healthy. I hope that we get another trip to Zaxby's soon. I got to find what's the closest Zaxby's to where we are right now. Maybe we'll do like a road trip video. They'll love that.
Go to the website, man. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, we do need a road trip to Zaxby's. That'd be a good idea. All right, let's take a journey now on the road to Super Bowl. I don't know. I think that I might be stepping on some trademark stuff by calling it the road to Super Bowl, whatever. But anyhow, let's kibitz with our pal, shall we? Here he comes, everybody. Sean O'Hara. All right, everybody. Studio 66, always a little bit brighter when this guy shadows the door. Of course, a Super Bowl ring on his figurative finger. He doesn't wear it because he has dignity. I don't like those when the fellas walk around with that bauble on their hand. It's ridiculous.
It's in the vault. It comes out on special occasions, Giants events, and then obviously Super Bowl week. But yeah, you don't just – it's not an everyday thing. You don't want it to lose its luster.
Conversely, now that we're on the other side of another Hall of Fame induction, I always tell those guys, that thing needs to come out all the time. If you have a gold jacket in your closet, why is it under plastic for special occasions? You wear it out to dinner once a week, standardly. And they give you two anyway. Get one for weekly use and the other one you keep pristine.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not like a varsity letter jacket in high school. You don't rock it to the movies. You don't rock it everywhere. I feel like the Hall of Fame jacket's kind of in the same category as the Masters. You don't wear the green jacket. Actually, you can't even take it off premise.
Incorrect. By the way, I should introduce him. He's the Wall of Famer here, giant, and of course a Cleveland Browns legend. It's Sean O'Hara.
Ironically enough... Thank you. Thank you for that applause. Studio 66 kind of brings me back. I was 66 in high school. I was 66 in college. And, you know, my dad started buying me like the Route 66 mugs and shirts and kind of, that was like kind of like the joke, like Route 66. Oh, yeah,
follow it's funny. Well, you see the 66 is on the wall there for not a football player, but for Mario Lemieux. I submit that it should be retired at least in the NHL, if not for all of sports. Why try to follow those footsteps?
It's a great number. When I came to the Browns, Jeremy McKinney was 66. So they gave me 60, and then I made the team. And then I was like, I don't want to switch numbers now. I made the team. 60 kind of worked for me. Then when I came to the Giants, Deal was 66. And so I just
– you have a pretty nice range, except the numbers tend to be kind of ugly. 50 up to 79 available for NFL offensive linemen. What would you say is the best, 66?
I think 60 – I like the double numbers. Me like too. 77 is kind of cool. Yep. 55 is really cool. I would have taken 50.
50 is kind of neat.
To pay homage to Mike Singletary. He was kind of one of my childhood heroes growing up. But 60s really just kind of grew on me. Obviously, I have an O in my name and the zero with the number. There was some alliteration there.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, you could also go double zero like Jim Otto did. Right. Yeah, that's kind of would be nice.
Is Otto Graham?
Otto Graham was also double zeros, right?
Or was he 60?
He was, No, you're right. He was 60. All right, I'm getting confused now. But then when he got to the NFL, he went to a more conventional.
Yeah,
number.
I think, which is funny because I remember like my second year with the Browns, like I walk in and someone's wearing a 60 jersey in the stadium. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I'm like, oh yeah, that's not for me. It's the legend.
You know what? While we're in this realm of legends and all that sort of thing, I want to talk about the 2019 New York Football Giants. And in fact, Ryan Khalil, an offensive lineman like yourself, who moved around
like a side by side visual, we might be related.
People
tell us all the time. It was like me, Jeff Saturday, Ryan Khalil. We were like the triplets. And they would always butcher our names and think we're the same person. And I'm like, no, we're just another chubby white guy with a beard. But yeah, Khalil's—he's a good buddy of mine. We were in the Pro Bowl together a couple of years when he was down in Carolina. We were both the Pro Bowl center, so we got to spend a little time together. And great dude.
Love him. Well, how hard is that to come out of retirement and all that kind of stuff to jump in with the? It's a weird move, right? Well, these guys. Remember Russ Francis doing that? I'm sure you're even too young to remember Russ Francis, the great tight end. Yeah. He retired and then he reemerged where he wanted to. He retires from the Patriots, and then how's that? Is that like nominally? I wonder if you can I'm retired. Couldn't last year Le'Veon Bell been like, I'm actually retired now, and then like, you know what? I've decided to come out of retirement.
Well, for Ryan, it's interesting because he was battling some neck injuries in Carolina, and that was kind of why he missed some time. So to your question, are you in shape? Like, that's the big thing. Now, for Khalil, he was never really out of shape. He was a pretty athletic center and was never really overweight, not a huge, massive guy. He's not a guy that's going to blow up to 320 pounds when he retires. But, you know, if you've already retired and your mindset is, all right, I'm done, and then you get a call – I mean, number one, he just signed a contract for $8.4 million. So you say, yes, I can play. I'm coming back. I'll find a way to get in shape for that kind of number. But I think for him, it's really, has he been training? Has he been working out saying, you know, I'm going to stay in shape just in case a great offer shows up or something happens? If you've been doing that, it's a no-brainer. But if you've literally been, you know, eating Cool Ranch Doritos and living the good life and you know, cheers in the champagne of beers, Miller High Life, every day.
That's your choice, huh?
It gets a little hard to jump back in the saddle.
But does he feel obliged to pick up the phone and just say to the Panthers, like, just so you know, if you want to try and meet that or come anywhere close to that, my loyalties remain with you?
Well, he may have had some loyalty with that but until they signed Matt Paradis. Because, you know, once they've moved on from that, I think you're free and clear and ready to rock.
All right. Good stuff. Now, so I say legends, your two teams. Let's do those real quick here. We've been doing a little exercise over the last couple of weeks. You can take any player out of franchise history and plug them into the 2019 roster. Let's start with the New York Giants. Beginner's level stuff is if you take a Hall of Famer, and obviously I don't know you're going to do any better than Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you could, not only because of the best defensive player to ever play the game, but it's also a position of need.
Exactly. Right.
That's a slam dunk.
Give me a non-Hall of Famer.
A non-Hall of Famer. I mean, Give me Harry Carson or Carl Banks.
That's exactly what I told Spaghetti. Banks.
That defense jumps right out at you. And when you look at the Giants have really struggled. I mean, not since Antonio Pierce have they really had, you know, just a dominant three-down linebacker. So those would be a couple guys that I would pluck. With Saquon, you're good at running back. I mean, Tiki Barber was unbelievably productive his last 3 years.
You know who I said, too?
Dave Meggett.
Ooh, that's a fun one. That, you know, we said Devin Hester for the Bears, because if you plug in a guy who can break a game with a punt return and you have a dominant defense, you're going to win an extra couple of games.
I mean, if you put Devin Hester on that defense with how many takeaways they had, I mean, he returned the opening kickoff in the Super Bowl back for a touchdown. So are we just sticking
with
the Giants
I said Carl Banks, and then Spaghetti threw out, like, I think you said about 60, 65 names. And then I said, you know who the right answer is? It's Sean O'Hara.
I think that'd be pretty low on the list.
Not for me, friend.
I don't even know if I'd be on the legend list.
Eli would like it because he'd have his French fry man back.
Sure, yeah.
Saturday night French fry delivery guy.
Among other things. How about a little under the radar guy? How about Jeff Fiegels?
Okay, that's
fun.
Bring
him back because...
Field position.
I mean, nobody was better at downing punts inside the 20. I mean, he was automatic. That could be big.
I hadn't considered punters, but that could help some teams legitimately.
You mentioned Evan Engram when we were talking before, and he's a stud. But who wouldn't want to see Mark Bavaro?
Oh yeah,
back in there. I mean,
Gronk before Gronk, right?
Shockey. That would be some interesting lightning rods.
All right, let's skip the Browns and let's instead talk about your Giants. The state of them right now. You're doing preseason football. You're calling the games for the Giants. I saw you on TV last week with the great Madelyn Burke. In fact, you mentioned Evan Engram, and I've talked with Madelyn about this too. Evan Engram and I have teamed up on an important cause for anybody who I'm not a Giants guy, but, you know, I have a big heart. I'm an empath, you know, and I'd like to see for Spaghetti, for you, the Giants do nicely. The big trick is Saquon's great, but we got to keep him grounded a little bit. We can't let him get a big head. He's the best running back in pro football, I say, already. So we don't want him to get an outsized ego. There have been issues with that, some would say, in that Giants locker room the last half dozen years.
No one would say that, but yeah.
I heard that.
That he's got an ego?
Not about Saquon. I said that's been an issue that some people have said that there at least used to be a big ego guy in that locker room. Other people say, no, that's incorrect. But anyway, that's not the issue. Look at the deep breath. Look at the fresh breath. Everybody in August is feeling so good.
I love you prefaced this with this is a very important cause.
It is an important cause to do this. Evan Engram has decided he's going to have a ping pong tournament, and he says that he can humble Saquon by defeating him soundly in ping pong. I said, you know what? Saquon likes to talk stuff about how he's great at Connect Four. I'll give him his comeuppance in four. Now, Sean O'Hara, you are the link. You can make it all happen. When you're out there next, I want you to set up a Connect Four board.
I'll do my best.
Then you hit FaceTime. Right. You call Damashek in Los Angeles, and we'll just FaceTime from both sides of Football America, and we'll see who's the best.
All right. I probably have a better chance of getting the Connect Four agreement as opposed to the ping pong, just because, you know, like guys in training camp, they want to be off their feet, they want to rest. So the Connect Four definitely alludes to that a little bit.
I'm not good at ping pong anyway.
Do we know if there's a Connect Four in the Giants,
lounge? I'll spend the $10.
We'll have to find that.
I'll spend
out.
The $10
or,
bucks
or
for
I'll
it.
Just bring. I'll just steal my son's. I'll bring that in. So hopefully,
it's
he's
not
got
a child's game, you know.
But I got to imagine Saquon would be pretty damn good at ping pong, though. I mean, he's already. You said you want to keep him grounded. I mean, he's already right there. He's already lower. He's got the quickness. It'd be pretty hard to. Be pretty hard to get him going side to side and struggling with that change of
direction. Now we have Ryan Khalil wearing the green. The new green, in fact, which looks kind of good. The more I see it, the more I like it, although they need a white face mask, not a black one. That was a bad choice. But otherwise, I kind of like the new look.
It's like a stealth green more than a gang green, right?
Okay. I don't really see the distinction, but okay.
Like
stealth?
Like the stealth is a little bit darker, like a little more camouflage, like a little bit blacker.
I think it's more of
a blackish green than like the bright.
I don't know if I see it that way. Yeah, they should have worn the Freeman McNeil green, the Ken O'Brien green. But this one's kind of sparkly on the hat and everything. Yeah. Either way, on New Year's Eve 2019, who do we look back and say, now that 26 in New York carrying the football had the better year, Saquon or Lev Bell?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm gonna say Saquon. I think Saquon is more explosive. Le'Veon Bell has definitely had a lot of great production, but when you look at the 91 catches that Saquon just had last year, he set a franchise record for I think it was an NFL record actually for rookie receptions. The impact that he's going to have in the game, I think he has more explosive power than Le'Veon Bell. I don't think Le'Veon's going to give you as dynamic and explosive plays that Saquon will. But I also, I think the Giants' offensive line will be better than the Jets' offensive line. Now, the Jets got Kalichio Simile in that trade. They signed Ryan Khalil, as you just mentioned. So that's two immediate upgrades at the center and the left guard. But I think the tackles are still TBD. And I think Kelvin Beachum has done a good job. He's been a very good, solid left tackle in the league for a while. Brandon Schell at right tackle has shown a lot of promise. He's got a lot of power. But I don't know what that offense looks like for a running back with Adam Gase. Adam Gase is more – he wants to throw the ball. He wants to air it out. So I'm curious to see how Le'Veon Bell fits in this offense and how many touches they actually do give him. The other factor I'll throw in there with a young quarterback, defenses play you differently. I remember even in Eli's second year, we saw more blitzes. We saw a lot more variety because they want to know, is this young buck, does he have it figured out? Khalil is going to actually help out with that. How symbiotic of a relationship is this? Both Trojans, all right? You got a USC guy now snapping to a USC quarterback. That's pretty cool, but I think that's part of the reason why they signed Khalil. Mentally, he can help Sam out. His eyes, he's going to be able to read the defense, help him out with what he's seeing. So I think that should help out. But I'll take Saquon in the comparison between him and Le'Veon.
I think it goes without saying, as I concede to you pretty much every time we ever talk about offensive linemen, I am not one of the pretentious masses who pretends that I understand which 300-pound man leans good on other giant-sized human beings. But I think it goes without saying that you want a one-cut runner if you're an offensive lineman. It's an easier spot to be put in. How do those guys have to adjust to Le'Veon's style? And also, it seems to me, watching Le'Veon Bell the last time he was out on a football field, I was watching how the Patriots kind of played him, and they a lot of backside pursuit. Le'Veon Bell stands there sometimes in the backfield, like with the football in his hands, and you can kind of chase him down a little bit. Is that going to be an issue? Are they built to be able to let Le'Veon Bell be that uber patient, kind of like I might come to a complete stop before I break for a hole? How hard is that?
You know, we've labeled Le'Veon the most patient runner in the league, and here's why he's been able to do that. He's had one of the best offensive lines. I mean, for the last every year that Le'Veon was in Pittsburgh, he had a top five offensive line. So that enables you to be patient. That will help this Jets offensive line, because there's nothing more frustrating than a running back that just takes the ball and just runs and just, he doesn't wait, doesn't set.
Oh, so I said it upside down then.
Well, I think that
you don't have to hold your block as long as what was the premise of my thought.
They both help their offensive lines in different ways. I think Saquon being explosive, he can help you out because he can hit the hole so fast and he can run away from guys. He can make guys look pedestrian, make them look like they're standing still. We saw him doing it against Jacksonville in week one, and he did it throughout the entire season. He has that ability to make that guy miss. So as an offensive line, man, if you do mess up and you leave an unblocked guy, Saquon's going to make him miss anyways. Le'Veon Bell has a little bit of that, but Le'Veon Bell has been more patient, but he's also been – it's been more of zone blocking. So, you know what, I'm going to let the play develop, press a hole, and then, to your point, cut back. So different styles of runners. I think Le'Veon Bell will make them better, just like Tiki Barber made us better because he had great vision. He understood if the defense was over-pursuing a play, he could put his foot in the ground and cut against the grain. He understood all of that. Saquon is getting to that point. But I think for Le'Veon Bell, the challenge really is just going to be, like I was saying, a lot of his big runs came later on in the game. Because Pittsburgh was patient with the run. They were going to give him 20 carries. They were going to let him figure it out. And the first 12 carries maybe didn't get a whole lot. Maybe it was 3 yards a carry. And then all of a sudden you pop a big one, and that's what boosts your average per carry.
It is interesting, just as a side note. I, you know, obviously, goes without saying, grew up watching the Steelers. And that it's no wonder that fans, people always say, like, oh, blue-collar town really loves the rugged style of that. I would submit that you know, people in Jacksonville enjoy that if it's leading the wins just sure. as much as anybody. Yeah. I mean, I think the people in Miami enjoyed the 70s Dolphins grinding it out with Larry Zonka and Jim Kick.
What's funny about that is, like, who led the league in passing yards last year?
I don't know who. Steelers? Yeah, right, right. Yeah, that is funny. That so, nobody seems to acknowledge, like, right. hey, by the way, they don't run it as much as they do. That's Steeler football,
Ben
that
threw
stuff.
More passes last year than any quarterback in the league.
But even with Cowher, and to some degree with Tomlin, it is satisfying just from a fan, because we live vicariously, obviously, through the physical deeds, and it's such a physical sport. It must be satisfying as an offensive lineman when you start to feel like with a Zeke Elliott type or a Le'Veon Bell or, you know, I'm thinking of kind of Jerome Bettis a generation ago. It must be satisfying when it turns to the fourth quarter and you're up three and you're like, yeah, we're not going to give them the ball back. We're just going to grind them.
It's a wrap.
There's nothing they can do. Three yards at a clip, Woody Hayes style kind of thing. It's so frustrating, and you must be able to feel the air go out of the joint when you're on the road and you're like, these fans are so anxious. They want the ball back, and we're not going. We're just going to grind you real slow.
They know that's it. It's almost like when you have that run game, it's like having Mariano Rivera, all right, to the Yankees fans. When Enter Sandman is playing in the stadium, you know that's a wrap. All right, well, you know what? Guess what? Everybody wanted to watch Mariano Rivera, but everybody also left. Because when Mo came in, it was like, all right, I'm beating traffic. We're getting home early because that's it. He was going to close the game.
Do you suppose, I mean, you were on the rugged style. I mean, Eli made some big plays in big spots to make the difference. But they, you know, they fit that, like, you know, you guys fit that physical style. Do you think it's more satisfying for the muckers, the guys at the line of scrimmage, to be on that kind of team or to be on a team that just smokes you via you know, just outscoring anybody? Like if you're on Dan Fouts' Chargers in 1980, or even I guess Patrick Mahomes' Chiefs, do you feel like it's easier to get buy-in from guys if you just say, and if you're the coach and say, we're just going to grind, we're going to physically impose our will onto all that jive that you hear? I mean, maybe it's not jive. I mean, maybe that's
jive, but listen, it definitely takes its toll. It's hard to do that 16 weeks in a row, just grind on it, because you're grinding on yourself too. But just take, for example, look at the Chiefs-Rams game, all right? Total shootout. I mean, the best game of the year, right? It won an ESPY for best game.
Of the decade, at least, right?
But you score on those biggest pulse games, plays, and all of a sudden now it's like, hey, we played 90 snaps in this game because it was a track meet. Well, look, I would rather have 65 plays and we're grinding the heck out of you. That's less wear and tear on your body. But even the Chiefs lost to the Patriots because the Patriots got the ball back and went down and scored. It was whoever had the ball last. If you have that run game, you can close it out. You're going to win more games. Case in point, I was just talking to Dave Tyree about it. 2008, that was the most fun I've ever had in a football season. We started out 11-1. We were just smoking fools. I mean, we had Earth, Wind, and Fire, Brandon Jacobs, Ahmad Bradshaw, Derek Ward. We were just thrashing people. And my favorite game was against the Carolina Panthers. It was basically for the number one seed. We were the two best teams in the NFC. I think Derek Ward had 200 yards rushing. It went into, I think, double overtime, and he rattled off this big run to basically seal the victory for us. But we rushed for, I think, almost, it was 200 plus. It might have been close to 300 yards rushing. That was one of the most gratifying wins because we just mashed them. And you know what? Look, I remember talking to Eli. He's like, I had the best seat in the house. I just got to hand the ball off and then watch you guys work and grind it out. I think every quarterback loves to run that 2-minute offense and have to make that big throw, the game-winning throw.
It's more inclusive. It makes sense on a human level that you would enjoy doing that more.
But that's football. That's football at its purest level. When you can literally just – it's like ground and pound in MMA. When you literally just get somebody on the ground and they're not going to get up. You're not going to let them out. You just make them tap out.
I think that's where all that rhetoric and all that kind of stuff that veers into almost hokiness, like, you know, the game of football is about who can impose.
Right.
Come out and play. Everyone has a plan until you come out, punch him in the mouth.
And
all
who's
that kind
done
of
a
stuff.
Better job of portraying that than NFL films? Like when you hear that voice and the music starts coming, what's the first thing that you see? You see weather. And so to your point about why is Pittsburgh, like, we're this blue-collar town, same when I played with Cleveland, a lot of it's because of the weather. You better have a run game if you want to win games at home in Pittsburgh in December, right? You better have the bus. You better have somebody that can just turn up, because you might get a mutter. You might get, 6 inches of snow, and you're going to have to run the ball. You can't throw the ball 45 times. You don't think of you know, the Atlanta Falcons, when they were doing the Dirty Bird and Jamal Anderson, you didn't think of them as like a power running team because they were inside. The Greatest Show on Turf, they were indoors. Like, you didn't think of them as we're going to grind you
up. That's exactly.
Because the conditions were not a factor.
It's true. And we talked to Andrew Hawkins last week about this. And I said, really, after 20 years, no one really has solved what it is Belichick's doing, because you can't apply it to any of the 31 other franchises. You can't just mimic what they're doing.
Right.
It's unsolvable, and it's all very fundamental. And Hawkins said what I have always broadly just kind of hypothesized. They don't marry themselves to any identity. Their identity is, we are chameleons. And on some level, I think it's hard. I think you look at it and it feels like smoke and mirrors on some level. Like, what? Who are the guys besides Brady and Belichick? Everything else is, I mean, you know, the Gronk era was grand, yeah. And, you know, yeah. Richard Seymour was a high end player. But, you know, and Willie McGinnis, obviously a dominant guy who belongs in the Hall, and Teddy Bruschi, a great career. But, you know, really, it's a lot of interchangeable parts, and it really has to do with that. But I find that. I'm not diminishing the dynasty, but it is vaguely unsatisfying, but it's the right way to do it, right? It's like, we'll do it any way you guys want to do it.
You know, I guess there's the yin and yang of that. It's, for you, it's vaguely unsatisfying, but to me, it's even more remarkable that
it's
they can
impressive.
They can morph. And you say chameleon, you know, I mean, let's put it in 21st century terms. Brady and Belichick, they're basically in an open relationship. Like I said, they're not monogamous. We're not married to this style of winning. We see it every year, right? They start out, they're a good team. In November, they'll have like a three-week span where they're the best rushing team in the NFL. They, all of a sudden, they just come out and they go three tight ends, and they just – I mean, it started a few years back with against the Indianapolis Colts. They said, you can't stop us. In two games in a row, they just bludgeoned them. And you say, okay, man, we got to pack up. Now, all of a sudden, they're running the football. And then they spread you out, and they just dice you up. There's so many different ways to beat you, and they will find a different way week in and week out. But I love that, man, in November and December, they go back to the roots. They go back to the Lombardi style of football, you know, the student body right.
Mm-hmm.
And they just basically play smash mouth football. The one thing that is consistent about the Patriots, and it's why they're in the AFC Championship game every year, why they're in the Super Bowl almost every year, they don't lose the battle of the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. When's the last time you saw their defense just get dominated?
Well, and but
consistently,
but that in spite of the
line-wise, them get dominated. But then they always win.
But again, but then they let that Nate Solder moves on. Giants spend heaps of loot on him. Oh, well, you know, then
we'll
draft
the
guy. We'll draft Isaiah Witt. Oh, he's out for the year. Well, then they're Brady's going to get it this year. He's not going to feel safe this year. Well, no matter. They just keep on doing it.
They adapt.
It really is bizarre.
They must be really good at Connect Four.
I think you're being a wiseacre, but you know what? Just as I don't talk about offensive line stuff that I don't understand, maybe you should.
Yeah, you lost us all when you said offensive linemen lean on people. That's
what you do.
That's what we do. We lean on people.
You push it.
There's no leg drive. There's no physics. It's just leaning.
I'm pushing at you. You know, all that stuff. Whatever you do. What, I'm supposed to evaluate that? How could I do that five times over on a play? I don't know. I'll listen to you.
Please don't.
Exactly. You don't want me stepping on your toes. You, Baldy, there are a handful of guys I turn to. Ross Tucker, like those. I'll take your word for it. You tell me, and then I'll go with that.
That'll get you kicked out of the O-line room real quick. You step on someone's foot. I mean, someone's going down. That's why we do walkthroughs.
You guys step
Let's
on.
Let's not step on each other's foot, because a 330-pounder stepping on your foot, that's mashed potato.
I know. Well, you guys step on the quarterback's feet more than the other way around.
You could identify the offensive lineman on a team by just looking at their toes, because offensive linemen are missing toenails. They've got black toenails because you get stepped on. It happens.
I could talk about that stuff all day. Just very quickly, best offensive line right now, Steelers. Is that right? It seems like that's the collective stuff I keep hearing. Cowboys were that 2 years
ago.
I
would put Philly in there.
Still Philly.
I think Philly with Brandon Brooks. He's coming back from the Achilles with him healthy. Troy Seamalo, at left guard.
Lane looks like Johnson and Jason Peters is still dominant.
Jason Peters is still playing at elite level, and they just drafted this kid, Andre Dillard. They moved up into the first round to get him. So, I mean, there's a chance he could end up being in there. I think Philly is right up there.
He seems like Andre Dillard. Talking to him for 5 minutes was enough to convince me. He's one of those like classic offensive lineman types. So he's super smart. and comports himself almost like he's a military man, like, hello, nice to meet you, and whatever. And you can tell, like, he flips a switch and gets real mean.
Well, I think actually that's what they're waiting. They want to see that. They want to see that mean streak from him. They want to see him get physical. And the tough thing is, you know, watching film on him before the draft, I don't think I saw a run play.
That was, well, they was throw at Houston.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, you didn't see him fire out. He was in a 2-point stance. The only time he put his hand in the dirt was to tie his shoe. So that's something that they're still TBD.
We've talked about it this offseason. The only thing, as far as I can tell, that would hold down those Eagles is Carson Wentz feeling too much pressure. I feel like the weight of the world, even with that contract, is still on his shoulders. And even if he goes 14-2, the locals are still going to be like, do it in January. So that's a fair amount of pressure.
Yeah. I think the pressure on him is really more just to stay healthy. It's not about performance.
Also true, right.
You know, I mean, I was at training camp a couple of days ago. Carson looks unbelievable. I mean,
everybody keeps saying that, but the whispers.
So good, not just with the, I mean, when he throws the ball, I mean, it's. It's fun to watch. You're almost mesmerized because his release is so quick. He's almost got like an Aaron Rodgers like release, but he's so stoic back there. But the ball's coming out so quick. So he's in year three now, and I think this could be. I think he's going to have a great year. I mean, the health is just the big factor. That's the only reason. That's really the only knock you could say on Carson right now is that he just hasn't stayed healthy.
But he's also a human being, and I'm sure like any other first string quarterback in the NFL, especially one who has been sort of validated by $100 million. This is how much confidence we have in you. It also goes against the fact that in late December and January, the whispers were kind of out there that, the coaching staff, yeah, they know Carson Wentz is the better talent, but Nick Foles runs our offense better.
I don't buy into that whole theory that Nick Foles runs the offense better. It was just different. And I think Carson just had a little bit of a different relationship. And when Nick Foles came in at quarterback, all of a sudden Alshon Jeffrey emerged. All of a sudden the ball was going outside the numbers. When Carson's in there, he attacks the middle of the field a lot better and a lot more than Nick Foles did. So they're two different. But I think from a number standpoint, and everybody's locked on fantasy football, so they're gonna grade Carson Wentz by how many points he gives them in the fantasy world. I think when you look at what the Eagles have done this offseason, they might actually be deducing his fantasy numbers by trading for Jordan Howard and drafting Miles Sanders in the second round. That to me says we're committing to what got us in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, that 1-2 punch of LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi.
That was
an explosive run game.
That was obvious that was what they were missing.
Going back to what we talked
October,
about before,
right.
Can you run the football in November, December? Can you close out games? They're committing to that by what they've done in the offseason.
I completely agree with that. Now the Zeke issue, we'll see how that resolves itself, if it does at all. But this opens to me is, and we've been talking about it, it's not because I'm talking to you. I get the questions about the defense. I think the Giants can be players, but weigh in now, because as of 2 months ago, all of a sudden it was like, oh, Eli doesn't have his arm anymore. His arm's gone. And now in camp, Eli looks great.
Who said that?
There were spaghetti. I'm not making that up. Spaghetti is my Giants whisperer. Yeah.
No, they're just some beat writers that were kind of mocking the arc of the
like,
throws.
You know, that's the mob mentality. People say, well, the Giants are terrible. I ask anybody that says that, if you've watched the New York Giants the last 2 years, has quarterback been the reason why they've lost games the last 2 years?
A lot of people say that.
Okay. Well, a lot of people say a lot of crazy things, and a lot of people don't really know football. They don't study football. They watch football. But it's never been a question about Eli's arm. It's been, can he stay upright? You know what the percentage is of completed passes when you're on your back? Zero. So
Mahomes could probably do it.
He could do it without looking. But Eli's arm has not been an issue. You know, 2 years ago, they start out 0-4. They lose some awful games. They lose on a 61-yard field goal to Jake Elliott against Philly. They lose an awful game down in Tampa Bay because Cameron Brate beats Landon Collins 1-on-1. So they start out 0-4. But people forget that year in training camp, the Giants had gone to the playoffs the year before, lost to Green Bay. They signed Brandon Marshall in the offseason. a couple other guys they picked up, they were talking about Super Bowl.
Yeah, that got sideways fast. It was like the greatest collection of receivers ever.
They're playing the Chargers. Both teams are 0-4. The Giants lose all three receivers in one game. Brandon Marshall hurts his ankle. Sterling Shepard hurts his ankle. And Odell breaks his leg. They lost their three. That was it. The season was done in week five. It was a wrap. They lost that game. They ended up being 0-5. And that wasn't on Eli.
We sat here a year ago.
Here's the thing that I also contest to people. You want to challenge Eli Manning's arm, but yet we're going to talk about Odell Beckham, the amount of yards and catches he's had his first 5 years in the league. All right, some of the best numbers in the history of this game. Who was throwing him the ball?
10.
We're not going to give Eli credit for
Odell.
Odell's
doesn't
stats.
Seem like he wants to. Odell doesn't want to give him any credit for it, it seems.
My point is, Eli, it's never been about his arm. Circling back on that, I was at training camp. He looks great. The ball, and to me, the big difference I see right now as opposed to this point last year, the ball is coming out quicker. The offense looks more authoritative, even without Odell. They were going to have a hard time replacing the production that Odell brought and the explosive plays. And I thought, you know what, with Golden Tate, with Sterling Shepard, and with Evan Ingram.
Evan Ingram being healthy is the X factor.
And then they get whacked. Sterling Shepard breaks his thumb on the first day. Corey Coleman goes down on the first day. Golden Tate's going to get whacked for four games, possibly. So all of a sudden now, Saquon, all of a sudden his quads have got to do a little bit more of the heavy lifting.
If you got Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram and Saquon Barkley, the cupboard is full as far as I'm concerned. That's a lot of talent you're running out there.
Evan Ingram is probably the biggest mismatch of them all. You know, I remember being in training camp the last couple of years when they would go to the red zone drill and it was one-on-ones and it would be receivers versus corners and then safeties versus tight ends. Evan Ingram was eating Landon Collins' lunch.
Health is the only issue
they could not cover Evan Ingram.
Yeah, I'm with you about that one. What do you think the fans – is the sense – I asked Spaghetti this as well. Do you get the sense that they want Eli, that they want the tenured guy, the hero of Super Bowls past, or do they want to turn the page to
the
kid? I know you don't care, but
– I can't figure out what fans want because they're fickle. You know, for 2 years, they talked about, we need to draft a quarterback high. What are we doing? What are we doing? The Giants draft a quarterback high. They boo the kid.
I know. That was so Giants mean. Fans,
they're like, what are we doing?
That.
I'm like, you've been begging for the Giants to draft a quarterback high 2 years in a row. And this is the third year in a row the Giants have drafted a quarterback, right? Davis Webb 2 years ago, then Kyle LaLetta, and now Daniel Jones. And yet they're not happy. They boo the guy. He goes to a Yankees game and gets booed.
I'm not making fun of Spaghetti. Well, I'm making fun of Spaghetti, but of fans in general. The greatest dynamic of like what you do when he's not a three-dimensional human being. He's just like a name that you heard, like who's a football man who you're going to live vicariously through for the next decade. Boo, you took him. Spaghetti, we're at the draft. And the name Daniel Jones is called out. And
what'd you do?
He almost threw up. He turned white.
He lost his spaghetti.
I just can't believe they did that. And it's more to do with the fact that Josh Allen was still on the board. And if we were committed to Eli, it's like, well, and just improve the team running. Like we said before, I mean, they need pass rush, and like, I mean, guy was the best on the board.
And nobody thought that Josh Allen was going to be there.
Exactly.
That was the other kicker.
Exactly.
Like, I thought Josh Allen's not going to be there. There's no way he's going to be there. And then he was there, and then they just they veered left.
I think it's jive, this spin that all of the regime's pals are saying from the outside. Like Daniel Jones would not have been there if they would have waited for pick 15. I think he would have been. I think he would have been there.
There was. I've heard a couple of different reports that John Elway really liked Daniel Jones. They had the 10th pick, and Daniel Jones would have been gone. He would have been in Denver.
And I guess Haskins would have gone.
They weren't going to let the Giants trade back in. They weren't going to give up that pick. And after the Giants took Daniel Jones, immediately after that, Denver traded out of that 10th pick.
Well, they also supposedly had Devin Bush's name written down and then backed off of that one.
But going back to your point, playing quarterback in New York, whether it's the Jets or the Giants, they don't love you till you're gone. I remember talking to Phil Sims about it. He's like, man, Giants fans hated me. They didn't want Phil Sims. He said they didn't start liking me until I was gone, until I retired. That's when he became a hero. Chad Pennington, case in point, Jets fans were happy to see him go, and then 2 years later, they would have loved to have Chad Pennington back. So it's a tough position to play, but I don't think anybody's handled it as well as Eli has. He's been the Derek Jeter of quarterbacks and that position, it's tough. Here's what Giants fans want. They want wins. The Giants fans have not seen a meaningful game in 3 years. And really, Giants fans are Yankees fans, right? That they kind of go hand in hand. Giants fans don't care about games in September because they're watching the Yankees. They're, all right, and until the Yankees are eliminated or until the baseball season is over with, that's when the Giants fans really start turning their attention. And unfortunately, the last 2 years,
the Giants season's
over, been over already. So they want to see meaningful games in November and December.
Actually, Spaghetti pushes back on that notion. I always thought that that was the case, but he said, no, I know plenty of Yankees fans versus Jets.
I mean, sure, it's not absolute, but
He also contends that the Yankees are bigger than the NFL. There are few towns in America where another sport is bigger than the NFL.
Yeah, they're in first place in their division, right?
Yeah.
And Yankees fans are still like, man, we're just, I don't know. Yeah. They're never all upset about it.
But Spaghetti, though, then 45 minutes later, Daniel Jones walks in to be an interview. He goes, oh, so it's nice to
meet
you.
That's my guy.
Because you see him, he's a human being, and he's a 21-year-old guy who should be living the biggest moment of his life.
You're like, never against him, which is more just the idea of the roster.
Yeah. You know what? It felt like a reach. It felt like, man, wow, they really jumped the shark on that one. But the fact that they had a 16th pick in the first round as well, it enabled them to do that. If they didn't have that 16th pick that they got in the Odell trade, I don't think they could do that. If they said, look, we only got one bite at the apple the first round.
I know, but it is, just to wrap it up, I just feel like it's a little bit of an in-between kind of a move to go Daniel Jones. Unless Daniel Jones, it's a little bit like the Philadelphia 76ers and the process. Like, how deep down the line are you looking to go here? If you're committed to Eli in 2019, then load up that defense or take Jonah Williams. Either way, why would you take a QB there unless – And even if Daniel Jones better not just be good. Daniel Jones better have been worth not building up that defense and putting Eli and the Giants of 2019 in the best possible shape to win games this season. Because that now they're in this in-between mode. Yeah. And I wonder if Eli's going to get hung out to dry by Golden Tate being down for four games and so on and so forth. And then Daniel Jones is put in the position to be a savior, and then they let Eli go off into the sunset. It'll be interesting to see how that shapes up.
I think their schedule actually, I mean, compared to what they had last year.
Well, that's what we talked about a year ago. Your team is doomed. I'm not denigrating them, but they'll be lucky to be 2-5.
Last year, their schedule, I think the first six games, I think they had four playoff teams.
It was miserable.
And four of those six games, I think, were prime time.
It's the worst one I've ever seen to open
national TV.
And it went on for half the season, how bad the games were.
Their schedule this year is much friendlier. But I think the tough conversation is going to be, if the Giants make the playoffs this year, this could be – Daniel Jones may not see the field for 2 years, which now makes it even harder to swallow, because if you go on to the playoffs and you make the playoffs, but you don't go far in the playoffs because you didn't really have a guy to win on third down, and you got to have that guy, you could have somebody that could help you win this year and next year. And if Daniel Jones doesn't play for 2 years, now it makes it tough to swallow that, wow, we drafted a guy 6th overall that may not take a snap for 2 years. I think that makes it even tougher.
So
The conversation, though, is, well, is he Aaron Rodgers? Because how long did Aaron Rodgers sit for? 3 years? Maybe four?
But I push back at that. Well, Spaghetti likes to say, well, it worked for Aaron Rodgers. That's kind of the one.
It's different because he was 24th. He was a 24th pick, so
even
you could
then,
kind of sit
if you
on that,
use but... a first round pick on a QB, then he starts in the 21st century. This jive about that the Skins might not go with Dwayne Haskins, that would be absurd. Why did you draft him then?
Well, the reason why that's a different conversation to me is because Case Keenum is a stopgap guy.
I know he's a stopgap guy. What are you saying to the fan base? Yeah, we're going to go with Case Keenum, who absolutely is not. Well, I mean, I guess he had the Vikings season.
If you're Jay Gruden, do you think you have a leash? No, you got to win some games. So and Daniel Snyder, too, he knows. I've got to win some games. So Case Keenum, if Dwayne Haskins is ready, Case Keenum's our guy. If Case Keenum and Dwayne Haskins are even, we're starting Dwayne Haskins, and he's our go-to guy. It doesn't mean they're going to win games. If Dwayne Haskins starts for the Washington Redskins this season in Week One, they're going to lose. They're going to be in last place.
That's stinking thinking. That's 20th century.
It's just realistic.
to they have a better chance of winning games when you look with at the high-end, big-arm kid, Dwayne Haskins, than they do Case Keenum. Same thing with, you know, all this Sam, the classic transition guy who, he's going to reach his potential at some point, Sam Bradford. That nonsense of throwing him out there instead of the kid, the teams do. Down in Arizona, they got it right. Kyler Murray's our guy. He's going to go, and, we'll see. He's going to have some rookie struggles. What evidence is there that a guy, especially one who can run away from pressure like that, that negates some of the nervousness or inability to read defenses or adjust to the speed, he's going to take off with the ball, and he's gonna have a very productive rookie season. We've seen this happen over and over in the 21st century. You know, this learn at the knee jive, do that with a fourth round diamond in the rough. You don't use a first round pick in the 21st century and then bench the guy so he learns from a journeyman like Josh McCown or somebody.
I mean, they're all independent case studies because Josh Allen is extremely athletic up in Buffalo and he struggled last year. He ran too much, you know. And then you look at they drafted Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs moved up. They traded up to get Mahomes, and then he sat that whole year.
I know, but I talked to I talked to Jeff Schwartz, who's plugged in with his brother. And what goes on there. And he said, well, Patrick Mahomes wouldn't have been the star like that. You have the hypothetical on your side. How would we know what Patrick Mahomes would have done a year prior? I bet you he would have been good. Maybe wouldn't have been the MVP of the league, but I bet you he would have been fine. Oh, Andy Reid's offense is too hard. He would have been fine. He's the better talent. That's who you play.
He would have made some plays. I don't know if they would have won as many games.
No, they don't have the season they had
that year.
I think it would have been close.
They went to the playoffs that year.
I know. I bet you they would have been fine. Because you also know that's the point. That's the end of that conversation to me. Do you think that Case Keenum can win you big games in January? No, then why would you play him? Isn't the premise now, unless you're the Dolphins right now, or you know maybe like the Cardinals, but they're I actually think they're gonna that offense will be productive if nothing else, but. Barring one or two exceptions in the NFL, every team, I think, legitimately believes we can go to the playoffs this year. What kind of message is that? Like, yeah, we're going to roll with Case Keenum in September. That's if things get dark and bleak. Well, that's when you go to Case. You don't put him in as your opening day starter.
It also matters, though, who you're throwing the ball to. Because who's the number one receiver in Washington?
I know, that's a problem.
It's Jordan Reed. You know, I mean... Is he healthy? You know, I mean, Nick Foles is going to be a great case study as well. Nick Foles has been phenomenal the last 2 years in Philly. You put him down in Jacksonville now. Who's he throwing to down there?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm totally so glad you just mentioned that because there are two big guys off the top of my head that have departed the NFC East and gone elsewhere. I don't know what weird football god voodoo this is, but some guys only are good in certain uniforms, and Nick Foles must be wearing the green. It has no makes no matter who the coach is.
He was phenomenal under Chip Kelly.
He did it with Chip Kelly
and then he leaves and he retires. He like basically
stinks everywhere he goes. Yeah. Stinks everywhere he goes, then goes back up. Oh, magic again. I think that I think the Jags are going to be a disappointment again this year.
Well, Case Keenum's a good point, too, because, I mean, he was with the Rams. Like, he was a backup, career backup, right? I think he was even in Houston before that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Then he goes up to Minnesota, lights out, goes to Denver, stinks it up. Mm-hmm. You know?
There's a weird thing that happens with that. The other one is, so you agree that Nick Foles will maybe disappoint ever so slightly?
I don't know. I think Nick Foles is going to – I think he makes Jacksonville better. I mean, he's an immediate upgrade at quarterback. I just don't – he's not going to have the same weapons that he had in Philly. So I don't know if he's going to have the same numbers. But I also think they're going to run a different offense. When you have Leonard Fournette, I think that offense is going to
As I always say, take care of the ball. Nick Foles never put up huge numbers with few exceptions in the second regime. But in his first go-around, he did put up big numbers. But
what Nick Foles is going to bring to Jacksonville, he's going to bring a guy. I mean, he's got the big arm. I mean, they call him Big Nick for a reason. But he is going to
bring... Oh, is that the reason? I didn't know that was the reason.
One of many. He's going to bring a different dimension to that passing game. He's going to make that big throw. He's going to give his receivers and his tight ends a chance to make a big play. I don't think Bortles ever gave him that opportunity.
Well, I just think the Colts are perhaps the class of the AFC. That's bad. It's all defense division. All four teams in that division have mighty defenses. And so who's the difference maker? That Houston has Deshaun Watson and Nuke Hopkins to make some splash plays. The Colts have Marlon Mack, and they have the best quarterback in the division. Well, maybe Deshaun Watson will press that a little bit with Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton. But anyway, they don't have – I don't think they have the skill position players on offense, including Nick Foles, to make a two or three difference-making plays over the course of 60 minutes, as much as the other teams do in that division. The other one is, speaking of guys who make splash plays, Odell Beckham, Baker Mayfield, a high-end guy who I don't want to sell out. Maybe he doesn't want me dropping his name here. He said, Odell Beckham will listen to Baker Mayfield. I said, it seems to me, a rookie head coach, never done it before, that's the guy who's got to manage Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham and Baker Mayfield. And he said, Odell's a peacock. My experience is that peacocks defer to the lion, and Baker Mayfield is a lion. Do you agree with that sort of whatever that is, a metaphor whatever you'd call it?
Fine. If we're going to go with that metaphor, he may be a lion, but he's still Simba right now. He's not, you know, he's not the king of the jungle yet. I think the one thing that people is maybe lost a little bit on Odell Beckham because of the flair that he brings. He is a very smart football player. I think Baker's listening to Odell more than Odell's listening to Baker, because Odell has done this. He's been doing it a lot longer than Baker has. But Odell will be telling him, hey, man, here's what I'm seeing, and here's how I'm going to bait that safety. I'm going to bait him on the double move by this. So when we get this coverage, here's how I feel them playing me. So I think that it's not Baker telling, hey, Odell, here's what's going on. Guess what? Odell's been doing this a long time, and he's made a lot of big plays, a lot of big catches. So I think it's not one guy necessarily talking down to the other, one guy listening. I think the one thing that they are going to have in common is that they're both young. They both love the flair. They both love the excitement. They love the hype. They're not scared to talk a little trash and back it up. To them, that's not bragging if you back it up. So I think that they're going to blossom together with that, you hope. The question I really have is, what happens if they don't win games?
Well, that's to me.
What happens if it's week six and you got two wins? Now, that does that become the distraction? And now are you guys still communicating? Because I think Baker, he's not going to shy away if you do mess up, you know, where, you know, Odell may not be used to that. He may not want to hear that. And that's really where you kind of get – Odell's to the point in his career where, you know, he's going to do things his way. He's got the contract. He's got the hype. He's not – you know, he knows what he can do.
It's funny because all things that have to on this show have to at some point revert back to Pittsburgh. And that relationship is really ultimately, people talk about Juju, the emergence of Juju, and to some degree that is related. It really was that they became, you know, the chemistry. Oh, Seven loves when the play breaks down and Antonio Brown knows how to feed that, and he knows how to break off a route and come back and help out. His guy, much like Santonio Holmes, was exquisite at doing. Those guys can really thrive with a guy who gets out of the pocket the way Roethlisberger can. The undoing there was that it was Antonio Brown at some point is like, here's what you got to do, Seven. And he became too dependent on or like didn't want to have to deal with the why didn't you throw the ball to me there, Roethlisberger? I was open. And he was running wonky routes and everything, and Seven's trying to jam the ball into him because he doesn't want to have to deal with on the sideline or otherwise with any nonsense. That's really the undoing of it. The last couple of years, that started the fracture. That's from everybody on the inside there. Yeah. That's why Seven. When you look at it, like, where was Seven throwing the ball there? He sailed the ball. It's always at Antonio Brown. If you go and look at that, it's because if you watch the All 22. Antonio Brown feels something like, feel what I'm doing, Roethlisberger, and he couldn't, and Seven at some point, who's as good an improviser at QB as there is, couldn't accommodate that. I can't wait to see how that goes in Oakland, how Seven does when he can spread it around a little bit. I can't wait to see how Baker Mayfield and Odell do. I'm excited for football, Sean O'Hare. That's what I'm excited for.
Yeah, it's back, and not only is it back, but we're celebrating 100 years of the NFL too, so I mean, it's a great season. Because we're going to look forward to all the games, but we're also going to get a chance to kind of look back at all the stuff. But yeah, to your point about AB and Ben, things got petty, you know, and I don't know how you let things get petty.
Because Seven didn't want to.
Grown men.
Because Seven didn't. Here's as I understand it, and I've talked to a ton of people who are close to it, and they say that it really, the root of it is that is that at some point, you know, the much ballyhooed, these guys are on the same page. He just knows where he's going to be in the moment. He can just put it up and he knows where 84 is going to be. At some point, that became detrimental rather than beneficial to that relationship. This thing, first of all, I need my targets. I'm your main guy. And rightly so. He could have been the MVP 2 years ago had he not hurt his leg against the Patriots, Antonio Brown. Still, if you look at the plays, you can see that Roethlisberger is trying to jam it in. He's trying to read him, you know, while large human beings are trying to tackle him. He's trying to see what 84 is doing against his better judgment. It got petty, but Roethlisberger didn't want to call him out publicly. And then he made that one comment, and then that's where it blew up.
Right. Which is, to me, it's great when we are improvising and all of a sudden, and look, I'm going to throw the ball up there and you're going to make a great play and we're both going to look like geniuses. It's great when it works, but there is not a quarterback that has played this game that wants to do that 16 weeks because they know that at some point it's going to bite you in the butt and it's going to cost you games and it's going to make you look bad. And that's not, you can't play backyard football 16 weeks. And that's what was going on from what I've heard.
That's right.
Antonio Brown, that Wi-Fi connection, it was 3G. You know, it was.
And
spotty.
We've heard the same things, yes.
And you'll deal with it early on. See, and it happens a couple of times, but you win games. All right, hey, look, we'll get over. But we can't keep doing it. By the time week 15, 16, 17, and now we need a playoff win. We got to find a way to get a big win. You can't have that. You can't do it.
Well, they did solve that, and they won that game against the Patriots, and then they did beat the Saints, except for a bad call with two minutes to go. The story would be completely different.
Can
if it
I just
hadn't
get this out
way.
Real quick?
You can get whatever out you want.
The crazy thing to me is that Antonio Brown claims that, man, his relationship was fractured with Ben. And, man, no, we're not talking. Ben claims he reached out to him. AB didn't talk to anybody. AB didn't show up that last week, didn't talk to anybody, didn't answer the phone when Mike Tomlin called him.
That's right.
Had his agent talk. So he doesn't communicate. He goes non-communicado with everybody on that team. I'm done. He basically broke it off. But then he goes and signs with the Raiders and immediately – his boys with D Carr. Now all of a sudden they're talking. They're best friends and they're communicating. Even the linebacker they signed, the linebacker from the Bengals,
Vontaze,
right?
Yeah,
Vontaze Burfict, who tried to kill him. He tried to end his life.
I mean, I thought he had actually succeeded in that and endeavor
asked,
in
hey,
the moment
and they
when
asked,
you looked at him.
Is there going to be any beef between you guys? You know, from your previous. Oh no, we're cool. We'll bury the hatchet. So you could bury the hatchet with a guy who tried to end your life, but you're not going to be able to make amends. And bury the hatchet with a guy who helped you become Mr.
Well,
Big Chest?
Because if you can go through life and you have the benefit of being a great talent and people will want you somewhere in your profession, you can treat things and relationships like an etch-a-sketch and just start anew until things get sideways and then you can do it again and move on, like kind of like the second half of T.O.'s career. Yeah. I think to kind of round it out back to Eli, especially in the pressure cooker of New York City, I think there's some human message to be sent to people about, I'm not good at doing this. I wish I could be more, comport myself like Eli Manning. Man, he is a metronome, man. He just doesn't, unlike all the other guys who have Super Bowl rings.
Easy.
He's just sort of breezy guy. Yeah, like, well, we'll sell you Daniel Jones. I'll help him out. How many guys would want to do that?
You know what? There's times where you wish that he would be a little more demonstrative. Hey, you know what? Go ahead and MF that guy. Like, you know what? How many times is he going to mess up and make you look bad before you get on him? But that's just
– And by the way, see, the backyard, that goes back to the other thing we were saying. Viscerally, as a fan, you love that backyard. Like, that broke down.
Sure,
and our guy's the only guy who could do it. Yeah. And when it's surgical, like it is with Drew Brees and Tom Brady, it's hard to connect with as a fan. You like the result. You like your team holding the Lombardi. But that's why I suspect, you know, 25, 30 years from now, I guess we'll have more we'll only have more respect for what the Patriots did. But there still isn't that visceral, like John Facenda voicing Tom Brady highlights would not be as good as him voicing Raiders highlights or you know, Steel Curtain highlights or Doomsday, like Tom Brady.
It'll be more documentary than drama, right?
Yeah, that's basically it. Although, paradoxically, they've also played in some of the greatest postseason games you've ever seen. That's what's weird. You think they're boring.
A little drama.
You think they're boring. Yeah. Almost all of their games are iconic ones.
10 years from now, 15 years from now, we'll talk about, we watched Brady in his prime. We'll talk about him like we talk about Jordan.
only if the one asterisk, and it's not an insignificant one, is if they don't skip a beat the year after he retires, that will dent his legacy.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Okay, you don't know. You don't know. Matt Cassel went 11-5.
Yeah,
and that's the one. That's the he's the human.
And then they lost in the playoffs.
They didn't even get to the playoffs.
Oh, there you go.
They didn't even go to the postseason, Sean O'Hara. Mm. See, I can contribute something to these conversations. All right. Hey, by the way, congratulations on baby, and also congratulations on the new hairdo. Don't think I didn't notice. I think you got a little new thanks. Swoopy
little side
thing.
Part.
Yeah, that's nice for you.
Changing up.
Yeah, the wife likes it.
She loved it. That's really? The reason why I stuck with it. My son, I would, you know, comb his hair after a bath or shower, and he always, you know, he would say, "Why do you comb my hair different?"
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "All right, I'll do it. I'll do a part. We'll look the same."
Esprit de corps, boy.
And then when wifey signs off on it, she says, "Oh, I like it. Yeah, it makes you look younger."
Oh yeah, you're hipping now, O'Hara. Yeah. 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 All right. Excellent stuff as always. There he goes, everybody. The great Sean O'Hara.
We're talking about hairdos.
Let's talk about Connect Four. Let's get out that Connect Four, and I'll teach you a lesson or five or four because it'll be four in a row. But I could Connect Five on you.
He's Dave Demma. Check.
Oh man, I found that conversation just delightful spaghetti.
Sean's the best because not only does he talk O-line, which is something that not a ton of media members could really dive into, but there's so much negativity towards the Giants specifically lately, last three seasons like Sean was talking about, and he's the one guy that actually makes very good points to fight back and combat, like, oh, the Eli stinks, and gives you actual reasons why the Giants have been struggling. So he seems positive. I'm kind of positive outside of this wide receiver news, but he was great. I'm glad whenever
objective enough, even though they're the arch nemesis for you guys, the Philadelphia Eagles. He's singing songs about what he's seeing there from Wentz and company.
I'm afraid. I'm much more afraid of them than the Cowboys. I think Wentz is a clear MVP shot. Their roster is pretty loaded top to bottom. They'll be tough, but
I can't imagine how they aren't really, really good. One of the best teams in the NFC this year. I would say they're top two or three right now.
The only holes he could poke, I mean, is like he said, Peter's still playing at an elite level. He is older. If
he's old
down,
and Wentz can't stay healthy or hasn't stayed healthy yet.
Obviously, with the ACL stuff, I mean, you don't want to hear about a back injury because backs, I think, last your entire career. But, I mean, if he's looking good in camp, he's a big-bodied guy. I mean, he has a great arm. It stinks to say, but they're going to be good.
Well, either way, great times with our pal O'Hara. And now you hear why he is a DDFP Studio 66 Wall of Famer. We'll be back later on for you. Football season, the games that actually matter. I know the preseason's fun, but remember, it's just a lie to your eyes. Don't get swayed by what you're seeing out there too hard. What you know in your brain before the preseason games began is probably true. Anyhow, we'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce later on, presented by Zaxby's. It's been a thin slice of heaven.